Snooker meets Subatu with Projectile on Amigos, Everything Amigo. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're talking about Projectile.
Yes, sir.
Now, Aaron, what do you think Projectile and West Virginia have in common?
The game or the actual projectile itself? Because the first thing that comes into my mind is bullets is what it reminds me of.
are you saying that we live in Crimetown, USA?
No, I'm saying we're in Huntingtown, USA, because we've got a Huntington, for that matter.
That's true. That's true. Well, you know, Eldritch the Cat, the developer of this fine title, they only did two games. They did this game in Chuck Yeager's Advanced Flight Trainer.
Yes, I noticed that. Yes, you're right. That is something we have in common. Chuck Yeager, yeah. Boat.
Chuck Yeager, West Virginia's own. So, Aaron, do you think that most Amiga games have a hidden West Virginia connection that just people don't realize?
Oh, I really don't think that, bud. That I think we found the only one that does, if you're honest. I don't think West Virginia came into the programmer's mind too much when they were making these games. I don't know what came into their minds most of the time. You know, we look at so many games. So many games. We've looked at a million games over the years, bud. I was watching a show in the past week, and they were talking about developing this game. And the bit was, I know what it was. It was Gary Kitchen was talking about this. I was watching an interview where he was talking about Donkey Kong on the ColecoVision. I mean, on the Atari 2600. There's always been a rumor that Coleco tanked Donkey Kong
on purpose
to
right.
make it crap, right?
Yeah.
And I saw an interview with Gary Kitchen. I wish I could remember the show it was on. But Gary said that was totally wrong. He did the conversion. Mm-hmm. And he said the deal was they used a smaller cart. But he said the size of the cart was irrelevant because I think he said he got like 5 weeks, something like that, to program the game. Because it had to be out for Christmas. And that was the contract he signed. We'll give you this much money. It has to be out by Christmas. And the quality was there. He says it was never even brought up. Not one time. And he talked about that, you know, they asked him, could you have done all the levels if you had a bigger cartridge? He goes, no. He goes, because I'd have the time to do it. He said if he had the time now and a bigger cartridge, he could put all the levels on the Atari 2600. But if you think about that game, because it got me to thinking, if you think about that game over the years, how kind of ridiculed it's been. And if you think to yourself, hey, this guy was knocked this thing out in a few weeks, you know, to beat the Christmas deadline, how many of the games that we played over the years have sucked or have been hampered or been hamstrung just for the exact same reasons that Gary Kitchen was? You know, how many do you think, do you want to give a percentage of games on as a whole that are hamstrung by people that need to publish them at a certain date?
Well, I think that you've got half of the equation, okay? Because you got to look at the video game developers, okay, especially in Europe. You know, this was a contract business. You have the big publishers. You've got Ocean. You've got Firebird. You know, you've got all of these big publishers, and they're basically hiring hired guns to come in and code these games. They say, okay, you know, unless it's one of the rare instances where you've written a game and you're bringing it to the publisher, otherwise it's like, hey, we've got this license for Rambo, okay? And we want to make some money with this. We're going to give you 6 months. You got to give us as much as you can in 6 months, or just, you know, turn out something decent and we'll let you go. Well, the programmer can look at this from one of two ways. He can say, well, I'm going to make it my life's work to make Rambo for the ZX Spectrum be the absolute best game that's ever been created. Or I'm going to pick up 3 or 4 of these contracts at a time, work on them as much as I can, and get paid for each one of them. And that's how you end up with games that are like they are. And you can't fault the programmer, because the programmer is trying to do this little thing called making a living. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody at Ocean was really feeling for, you know, the programmer. You know, they were like, okay, these guys are contract employees. The famous line from Atari, the programmers are the ones that choose the colors of the dish towels, you know. they want a product that they can turn around and sell, and they don't care if it's a work of art or not. So, you know, it's the same with Scott Shaw and E.T. Everybody ridicules E.T. as being the worst game of all time, which, by the way, it's not the worst game of all time by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
It's a decent game.
We've played worse games on this show.
The same thing with 2600 Pac-Man. I think 2600 Pac-Man, I think it was something like 4 or 6 weeks. He had to turn around from scratch a port of Pac-Man on a system that wasn't supposed to do anything but run combat for one holiday season before it was supplanted by something else. So you can't fault these programmers for doing what they do to get by. And at the same time, you can't look at these games as timeless works of art all the time either.
Yeah, it does put things into perspective when you take into account stuff like you just mentioned, where they literally, I mean, there's a reason why Gary Kitchen got brought in to do Donkey Kong, because they knew he was great and they needed it now. You know, and he said during the entire time he worked on it, not one time did anyone say anything about the quality or the lack of levels. And they said the last couple weeks he worked on it, they made him come to Coleco, and they hovered over him to make sure he was getting it done. Because the amount of money, he said that the year that Donkey Kong came out, it was responsible for some ludicrous amount, like a quarter of all of Coleco's profits that year was for Donkey Kong. He said they knew no matter what they released, they were going to sell every one of them, and they did. So it's quite interesting, though, to think about games in those terms. And I'm not going to lie to you, this does bleed slightly over into this week's game boat. Dramatic pause.
I thought you were going to cut to projectile.
I thought you're I paused it, by the way. I thought your thing locked up.
No,
you got to move a little.
I was waiting for you to go on to the next scene. That was a perfect setup.
I thought your thing locked up on you. Shoot. All right, here we go. Let's get back at it. Just start looking normal. Here we go. You recognize that big hit, Boat?
I do, man. That was the most irritating music I've ever heard in my life.
That was our theme song for years, Boat. And you can imagine my surprise when I found it. How did you come across that music, Boat?
Well, you know, I listened to a bunch of, they have these 10-hour videos on YouTube where it's like the greatest Amiga soundtracks.
Yeah.
And so, you page through these things, you immediately discount anything with the pan flute. And you zero in. You zero in on Manic Moose by Projectile. And it's funny. You know, we are almost a decade in to doing Amigos, and we have finally covered the game from which our theme song comes from.
It's funny because we covered a game a while back that had the next song in it. So we've actually now covered two games that had theme songs that we had in it.
We've come full circle.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. I'm not getting into it. This week we're looking at Projectile, spelled cool guy style, Boat.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the spelling of Projectile? Do you think this is a good name for a game?
Well, you know, the guys that created this game, there are two guys, Mark Davidson and Mark Wilding. Their development team is called Eldritch the Cat. Okay.
Right.
And they named their development team after the cat of one of the programmers, who was named after Andrew Eldritch. It's not like a Cthulhu reference, because at first I was like, Eldritch, you know, like you've got like the spooky stuff. But no, it's named after the lead vocalist of the band Sisters of Mercy. Have you ever heard of Sisters of Mercy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, they've got that song, "We're the Sisters of Mercy."
Don't they have a cool vampire song, as I recall?
That's
right. I remember
liking
it quite a bit.
Andrew Eldritch is known as the godfather of golf. of Goth, not of golf. That would be weird.
I stunned for a minute there. I was totally stunned. I thought that was Fuzzy Zoeing, and you're like, no, but it's this guy.
before The Cure and before, you know, all of those other bands, there was only Sisters of Mercy. And so the Eldritch Cat projectile has that gothic connection that you might not be aware of.
How nutty. What a nutty. Good backstory there, Boat. I don't know if you answered my question, yes or no to the name.
Oh, it's cool. Listen, I'm up for Eldritch anything.
I would have called it Projectile to me if I was going to go. Because the problem with calling your game Projectile is unless they see the spelling, it doesn't mean anything cool.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Aaron. They made a crucial mistake when they were coming up with the name of this game. Because what is the name of the game being played? Do you know?
It's called Tribal, I believe.
It's called Tribal, okay?
Yeah.
Can you think of another sports title where the name of the sport is not in the game when it's a brand new sport?
Well, I have to think about that, but not right off the top of my head.
You don't have to think about it because I've thought about it and it doesn't exist.
Well,
only sports title that is not, that is a like an invented sport that does not feature the name of the sport in the title.
Okay, I'll buy it. But I, the thing is, there's another name for this that was the best of all of them. Early on, they were calling this Scroller Ball. Now, that, I think, is your winner. I like that one. That's my favorite of the bunch.
No, Projectile's better.
Yeah, I don't like it. Published by EA. I mean, they've done tons. You mentioned this is developed by Eldritch Cat, who also did Chuck Yeager, as you mentioned earlier. One thing that threw me on here, the guy Mark Welding, he's got two names. He also goes by Mark Dawson. So if you see these two guys, it's the same guy.
Interesting.
Him and Steve Weatherell designed this. Steve was responsible. He worked on Desert Strike, Myth, Under Pressure, and he worked on tons of those Command & Conquer games that were real popular back in the day. And by the way, just an FYI, if you're interested in hearing from this guy, they had him over on the Retro Hour in episode 322. So that'd be kind of a neat thing to listen to.
Mark Dawson / Mark Welding. That is weird. That is super weird. We got to talk to Ravi, who I'm sure knows the answer, why this guy goes by two different names. But he was only known for two other games of his output. You know, like you said, Steve Weatherell, he did a whole bunch of stuff. But Mark Dawson / Welding, he did Dojo Dan, which I believe, wasn't that the name of one of your old martial arts instructors, Master Don?
Close, yeah.
Yeah. And
we didn't call it Dojo.
That would have been cool, though, Dojo Don.
Well, that's not the worst name, yeah.
And then he also did a game called Army Moves, Aaron. And Army Moves on Lemon, a 2.76.
You know, I looked at this Mark Welding / Dawson thing, and I don't know why he would have two names, but it's the same guy. Get this, though. He did stuff off the Amiga, and at some point, he was the senior projects manager at Software Creations. So,
really?
Yeah. Huh. So there you go. This was produced, of course, EA was behind this, so they had a helping hand in here. Produced by Kevin Shrapnel, who worked on one of our favorite games, Aquatic Games. He also worked on John Madden Football, Road Rash, Space Hulk, Wing Commander. That's a good pedigree for your producer.
Yeah.
And Steve Weatherall did the coding for this. The graphics were done by Elizabeth Jones and also Steve. Steve was the heavy hand in this. You know, just to jump into this early because it's apropos here, I found Steve has a blog, Boat.
So
I found a bunch of stuff out about this game I didn't know. And the first thing is the crediting. The initial graphics for Projectile, according to Steve's blog, were done by Stu Fotheringham. He did a lot of the arenas and a lot of the player graphics. He's not credited on the game at all. And one of the reasons is that due to EA's some complaining and some time constraints, I think Steve had to go back in and redo a bunch of the graphics. So, but he did say Stu did a good chunk of the graphics on this. The initial graphics on this were all done with Deluxe Paint and on the Amiga and a customized version of Advanced OCP Art Studio on the ST. This was an ST game, by the way, Boat, before it came over to the Amiga. So get this. Here's the truly wacky thing. So we'll get to it, but this game has, like, a lot of music in it, right?
Yeah, a ton. Like, way more than most Amiga games.
Right, exactly. And so this guy did the music for the game, too. He did it. He was like a one-man show, basically, or two-man, Steve Weatherill. He did the music on this. So he did it all on the ST using this program called Quartet, okay?
Okay.
And the problem is that there was no Quartet for the Amiga. Whoops. So he says he spent the night, as I'm going to quote him exactly here, that he basically, he spent a night and he hacked this thing over to work on the Amiga. He said he turned on some Def Leppard, got a bunch of like coffee, and sat down and made it so the Amiga could play these Quartet things. And he said it couldn't play it exactly like the ST did, because the ST has some like some sort of built-in like distortion that he liked, but he said it was still pretty close.
You know,
so I thought that was kind of neat.
People always talk about the Amiga being the king dong for everything.
Yeah,
I mean, they give it the ST Correct. Short shrift, but this is one of those times where the ST reigns supreme.
Well, and this in the music side of this too. Now here's something else that this is some other inside baseball I thought you'd enjoy. So according to Steve, EA, so they shopped this game around, just like you mentioned in the opening, you know. They shopped it around to see if anybody wanted to produce it. And they said they didn't think that EA, they said there's no chance EA is going to give a crap about this game. They almost skipped out on it. But they said, heck with it. They went and talked to them. EA kind of liked it. Like, this ain't bad. And so EA said they would pay them £15,000 for a version of this, the Atari ST and the Amiga. You know, if they met certain milestones and did certain things EA wanted. So that's the money they were looking at to put this thing out, £15,000.
Right.
So in case
you're
wondering.
I was going to say, when you're shopping this thing around, I guess you're going to want to take it to the biggest publisher first. And was there a bigger publisher for personal computers at this time than EA? Probably not.
Well, the funny thing is they took it to them last.
Oh.
Because they didn't think they'd have any chance of getting it done.
Then.
Yeah.
Am
I? So there you go. I saw two different prices for this. I guess at some point there was a price drop. I think initially this sold for £25 and eventually reduced to $19.99. I don't know why there would be two prices, but it's something I don't usually run into that. I mentioned it's converted to the ST. So with all that said, let's get into the game proper, Boat, because before we got into this game, you know, I was reading a lot of people talking about this, and I was looking at the reviews on Lemon, and this was quite a polarizing game. And I thought to myself, that's kind of weird how polarizing this is, considering it seems like a pretty basic sports game. And I'm assuming you never played this one before, have you?
I haven't seen this one before.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it either. So this is a futuristic sports game for 1 to 3 players simultaneous, but you can actually play up to 8 people in a season mode, but not simultaneously.
Now, do you want to talk a little bit about the backstory of this game?
The backstory. Go ahead, Boat. I'm sure you've got some interesting things to say. I can tell by looking at your face.
When you read the docs open up with the backstory of this game. This game is created in the far-flung future, when humanity has colonized many of the planets and moons in the solar system. And the game itself is called Tribes, as we alluded to earlier. It originated...
Tribal, sorry.
It originated inside of a crashed shuttle on Jupiter's second moon. So apparently there was a settlement on Jupiter's second moon, and people started just fooling around in the wreckage there. You know how sports works. You get some wreckage, people just start throwing balls around in there.
You get bored of another planet.
Tribal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the backstory.
Well, get this. I'm going to augment that. You ready for this? This is also from the blog. He says, I'm going to quote, if I may, Bo.
Okay.
Again, I'm going to quote. This is Steve Weatherill. This is a quote. He said, I came across the manual for Projectile recently. I do have a physical copy of the game. And the poster/manual included with the game is large and confusing. For one thing, a biography for Mark and myself looks like it was written by a middle schooler. Given the content,
it does.
I must have had a hand in it, but it's pretty impressively bad. And he also goes on to state that the rest of this thing is so bad that he wouldn't even post it on his site. He's like, this is the worst loads of crap.
It's funny. On Hall of Light, I was wondering about why this was presented like this, because normally what I do, the first thing I do whenever we play a game is I go on Hall of Light, find the manual, and I print out a hard copy. I'm a hard copy guy. Well, this, I tried to do that, and it was so tiny. It was just impossible. And I was like, man, whoever scanned this did a horrible job. Well, they didn't. They didn't do a horrible job. They did the best job they could. Yeah. Now that I know that it was on the back of a poster, that makes a lot more sense.
It was. This shipped with a big old poster. And then I cut it up for my notes here. That's what I did, because I'm like you. Mm-hmm. I like to have the things with all the stuff here. But, yeah, they it was on the back of a huge poster that was the same as the art on the box. It was a big, I mean, it's an interesting idea. I mean, it makes it hard to photocopy.
Is what you meant to say.
Well, no. I mean,
okay, here's the deal. When you get the poster, what do you want to do? Hang it on your wall. Yeah, when you hang it on your wall, what can't you do? Read the instructions.
What you do is you hang it up with the instructions on the outside.
The
reason I said it's not the worst idea is strictly for the because it makes it harder to photocopy for your buddy is what I was thinking. Mm, you know, okay. So there's something. It's a dumb idea. All right, you're right. You're not wrong, but that's the way they did it. By God. So, anyways, this is a futuristic sport that takes place in an arena that has several chambers in. I guess the best way to describe it would be. Think of five rooms, right?
Okay, you're already doing it wrong. Okay,
go ahead, Boat.
I had
a great one, but go ahead.
I want you to think of Biodome starring Pauly Shore.
Okay? I've never seen that.
And think about five of those biodomes, okay? And then subtract one, because I think there's only four.
This is your description? This is way worse than what I had.
And then... You have a central area, okay?
Yeah.
Then there are three players, there are three teams, okay? Each team has its own biodome where you can score. That's where their goal is. Their goal, like a soccer goal. And then on the bottom, you've got the frantic zone. So it makes like a cross shape. Think like a T shape, okay? And the bottom of the T is the frantic zone. That's where there is a goal for all three of the teams playing. So you can either, to score a goal against in one of your opponents, you can either steer the ball into their zone and score there, or you can steer the ball down into the frantic zone where there's a goal for each team.
Right. There are four separate chambers that are joined by four separate tunnels.
Yes.
All right. That's basically the long and short of it. It makes sense when you play. There's a little radar. This game, it's a simple game if you think about it. Just to simplify it. Three players are on the board, and you're trying to put a ball or a bubble or a disc, whatever it is on that level, into any of your opponent's goal to get a point. It's that simple. And you don't want them to score in your zone. Each zone has its own set of players. It's like you won't have like two of your guys in one zone. They all stay in their zone. You can move the puck out of the zone, but your guy doesn't move out of the zone because you've got guys in the other zone to represent you already. All right. This game is there are many teams in the game, and this is important. So let's go ahead and talk about this. So you've got eight different teams, okay? And it's funny, the manual spells them out. You've got the Eldritch Cats, the Sledgehammers, the Vectors, the Devils, the Terminators, the Jovian Jello Juggernauts, the Manic Moose, and the Yuztecs. And you've got all these teams, and each team has their home arena, right? And they look different, and they have different surfaces. So the puck or the ball or the bubble or whatever you're using will move around differently depending on what arena you're in. Plus, when you're in your home arena, supposedly you get a slight boost in speed or power or something like that. That's what they say. You could be any team you want. They're all up for grabs. So there are different ways to play this game. You can play a straight one game. You could do that where you play the computer or a couple friends. Then you can also play in a league. The league is a lot like speedball or something where you actually you pick a team, you go into the league. You play games, you score points to advance in the league, And you also pick up money to enhance your players if you've got that option set up. But basically, it's the same game, just with a bunch of extra crap piled onto it, basically. Am I missing anything here, Bode, in terms of just the basics of this?
I think you did a great job summing that up.
So, before we go any further, the first thing you see when you boot this thing up is you see a main menu, okay? Bode, your response to this menu.
This is the single worst opening menu I have ever seen in any video game.
That's what I was
This for. Makes this makes Settlers seem like a triumph of user interface.
Yeah. I knew you were going to hate it, but it's a horrible menu. I will go over what the stuff on the menu means if you're watching at home. You've got it's 9 icons going from left to right from the top. There's a big disc that gets you to the disc screen. There's a guy that says gives you a list of the top goal scorers. Then you've got a credits button that just shows you who made the game. Then you've got a thing to turn music sound effects on. Then you've got a thing to start the game. You've got an options menu, and then going around the bottom, you've got a table that gives you the league standings. You've got the game type set up, and you've got disc extras at the bottom right. It's moronic, isn't it, Bode? I mean, why did they just write? I mean, they've got projectile written at the top. Why did they just write what this crap did? It does it in the manual. Am I wrong or am I right?
You're right. I mean, they took what. I always think about what is the best way to do UI on the Amiga. And to me, the best way to do it is a combination of an icon and text below it.
Yes.
And what and if you go into each individual menu, like each submenu, there
it's
is
got
text there. So there is no reason why they couldn't include text on the main menu.
There's not one reason.
Yeah, and the buttons tend not to do what you think they will. Like the one that says, let's just play the stupid game. It's hard to find that one. The one that's a credits is a skull. What's that mean?
I don't know.
The menu screen is an I.O. gate, like you might read in like a circuit diagram.
Yeah, that was totally baffling. Yeah,
this is horrible.
Yeah, and like I said, in the manual, it's got a picture of the main menu with just what they are written under them. It's in the manual. So clearly they knew you were going to have trouble. But that's the way they did it. Now, I want to talk about a lot of people didn't get on with this game right away. And I think there's a reason for it. And I think the biggest reason is that they did not go to the options menu in this game, Bode. There's an options menu in this that is vast, isn't it? I mean, it gives you a ton of options.
There's a good 20 options you can tweak in this game.
Right. Yeah, and I don't just mean, like, basic options. I mean, like, options to to do real minor stuff, like turn off the sound effects when the ball hits the wall. Or, like, you could turn off instant replays, which I always did. You could do a bunch of stuff in here. Amongst the things you can do is you can also lower the skill level, which is, after I played for a while, I did that. It gives you tons of different options on here. And it's great. I mean, I will say, we've talked about this before. If you're going to make a game like this, and you have the ability to add all these options, put them in there. And this is one game that actually does what we've been harping about. And I will tell you, after fiddling with the options, they instantly made the game better. Your thoughts on the option screen?
Agreed 100%. Yeah. This is a game, first of all, I love this game. I thought this game was great. What this game is this is three-person air hockey, okay? I'm a big air hockey fan. I used to play over at the skate arena, okay? And what this does is it gives you that air hockey feeling where you have some control over the puck, but not total control. This is not a game like Speedball or like Sensible Soccer where you have control over the ball. If you're a good enough player, you can kind of dribble with the ball or hold the ball until you fire it in. This is a game where you're striking the ball at odd angles. You're just kind of watching to see what it does. And I like that feeling of not totally being in control of the game, okay? The developer of this game really missed a trick because they turned some of the best options off by default. For example, when you score a goal, you get a picture of the player that scored the goal if you turn that option on. That option is off by default. Okay. If you play in a league, you pick up cash in this game, which is called Dosh. I think that's one of those inane British witticisms. You pick up this money and you can upgrade your players and you can train them so they can become better in between matches if you turn that option on, because it's turned off by default.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't understand why they did this. I understand there's a need to want to give your players a good experience just by jumping in and playing the game. You know, maybe you don't want to turn on all the complicated things, but not turning on the picture of the player that scores the goal. I mean, what are you missing? What are you losing by not turning that on? You're just making your game more generic and boring. So these are things that just kind of struck me. But overall, I think that this game presents a unique take on, you know, a well sort of known genre. Who doesn't know about air hockey? You take this game, you put it in the far-flung future, you give your players a choice of various alien races and humanoid races. There are some statistics, for example, that can't be raised if you're not a humanoid. For example, like the knowledge or the intelligence of your players. If you're playing the Jovian juvenile jellyfish or whatever the purple team is, you can't raise your intelligence because they're already, I guess, mega intelligent, or they have no intelligence because they're an alien. You give your players a wide variety of races to play from. Then you also, you never change the layout of the pitches. It's always that cross shape, but you change the graphics on each one to give them each one a distinct feel. My favorite is the vector graphics one, which you just turned to right now. It's like you read my mind. This one is great. This is like a Battle Zone Asteroids type aesthetic. I love that. How many games have we played where we're begging for just some variety? This game gives you that variety. It gives you league options. Like I said, this game, and we're not even considering the like multiplayer aspect of it. Like if you get together with two other buddies and you're playing, you know, 3-on-3 action. I had a bunch of fun playing this just against the CPU. I play this. I did not ever change the difficulty. I kept it on medium. I was able to win a good number of games. I also lost a good number of games, but I felt that it was fair. I enjoy the strategy. For example, when you tip it off in the beginning, everybody just kind of rushes towards each other. There's some strategy in saying, well, maybe I don't want to rush towards and grab the ball right away. Maybe I want to catch it off the rebound. I thought that was cool. I love the idea of playing the frantic zone. You know, I always tried to push it down into the frantic zone as soon as possible. Do you know why I did it, Aaron?
I don't. I don't know why you would do that.
The reason why you do it is because goals you score are worth more than goals your opponents score in your goal, okay? So if you push the ball down into the frantic zone, you have a 2 out of 3 chance of scoring it in a goal in one screen versus wasting time chasing the ball up into somebody else's zone and then being limited to only one scoring zone in a screen.
I never go down there because
I discovered I don't want my goal to be up in the air.
I don't like to protect.
If you push the ball down into the frantic zone, even if you get scored against, your chances of scoring against another player are higher, and you can score more goals within the set amount of time. This game is one of the many dumb things about the manual is they say the game is played in 3 halves, which is Yogi Berra classic. And they say, or sets. Why didn't they just say 3 sets and not even
with that? It's funny because in the blog, he mentions that. He didn't say why it's like that, but apparently it was like that from the very beginning. That was maybe it's a sense of humor thing. It's funny because when you play the game, it says sets right there. It doesn't say 3 halves. I was wondering where you were going to fall in this because I was looking over the people talking about this in the Discord. They were just killing it. They're like basing this game. And so when I fired it up, I was like, man, I know this is going to be a dud. And I was like, I was playing it, and I figured out how to, you know, once I set the options the way I wanted them and stuff, and once you sit down and can figure out how your guys control and what the game is, it's actually, in my mind, it's quite brilliant. And I saw this compared to Speedball and Sensible Soccer, like you mentioned, and it's it's probably got a little bit of both of them in it, but I mean, I was much better at this game than I was at either one of those. I can tell you that right now.
Oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely.
And one of the reasons I got good at it, well, even on the very first game I played, I scored some goals, and I had an idea, because there's only three guys and so on the screen at once. And so you've got to best two other guys, all right, and which sometimes it's hard. But once you understand, and this is my strategy, once I knew it's like I'm always going to push this thing to someone else's danger zone. And then I can just, it's pure offense. And then you hopefully you'll get a good drop, or hopefully you'll get a good, like you said, stick back. Let those two fight it out. And then a lot of times you can get to carom and you get a good break and knock it in. And so after I played this a couple times, I was going to work. And I started a league and was just killing it. I was like, I won like my first three games. And now I wasn't like a crushing guys, but I mean, I was close. And it's the game's not easy, you know, by any stretch. But I mean, it's playable, and you're going to get better at it.
And they do a lot of where you set the league up, and you get a certain amount of points for first, second, or third. So even if you don't win a game, you're still in the running, which I also like.
Something else that you get, you know, it does. And this was it's funny because they mentioned this in the blog. EA dictated that this game should have a statistical feature, you know, because I guess it didn't have one at the outset. And the good move, EA was right. That gives the game a lot more depth. The upgrading your team, that was something else EA wanted. Good idea. I mean, that's very speedball-y, but it works in this. I mean, now, there are things they could have done. I look at this game, and it's a fun game. The fact that it supports three players with a keyboard or the parallel port edition for another joystick is great. And this is a game on my list to play three players, because I think it would really shine, Boat, as a three-player game. I really do. But I would love to see when I heard you could have an eight-player, you know, I thought, man, maybe you're getting eight people to play this, and they're playing the guys in different rooms. That'd be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's the case, but
it's not. But, I mean, that would be fun. You know, but I like the idea that you've only ever got two other opponents in one room, because then you don't feel like you're getting overwhelmed by the game. To me, I was surprised that there were so many different arenas, and they really do. They aside from the slight visual differences, it's a nice change to switch arenas. I like the fact that they've got like WWF style logos for each team. They're not just named; they've got cool logos, like you'd see in the old Saturday Night Main Event.
Yeah.
You know, which is cool. They've got cool, their icons are all different. The cats have a cat. You know, the vector guys look like the ship from Asteroids. You know, I like that. It makes it different. The three sets, I like that. Now, I will say there's a lot to like. In fact, I like this game overall. But they screwed some stuff up, Boat, in my opinion. I'm going to go after the number one screw up. This game features probably at least eight tunes. We played one for you, and there's some pretty good tunes in here. But the game only offers music or sound effects. And when you play music, it just plays whatever arenas you're in. It plays their music over and over. And you want to kill yourself, okay?
In the music,
was a mistake.
Listen, here's the thing. You know, obviously, we're a fan of the Manic Moose. But overall, this music to me got real old real fast. This is this is music written by a coder, music not written by a musician. And not having the sound effects, I turned the music off, and to me, the sound effects were a much more pleasant way to play this game.
Yes, I would like to have both. That's my point. That music would be a lot more tolerable if you could have the sound effects.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you can't. And so it's the as usual, you don't get both, and here we are. This should have been a mandatory by then, and so that was a screw up. This thing defaults with replays on. The replays in this are stupid. When you score a goal or somebody scores a goal, the replay banner comes up. If you hit your button, it just skips the replay. But if you don't, it just starts to replay up. I don't want that. You should hit the button for the replay. And if you don't hit the button, it doesn't start. So I turned that off.
No video game works that way, though. The replay is always automatic.
For me, the replay seemed totally backwards. I mean, the first thing I did, that's the reason I went to the options the very first time, because I kept hitting I kept sitting there, and the replay would come up, because sometimes you score real quick, and I was like, what happened? And then the replay would start. I don't want the replay, you know? So that was something, like you said, some of the default options were baffling. And they're including some that when you play in a league, like you can set it up to where if there's not a human playing in the game, because there's going to be games simulated between the computer. So you can set it up to where you can watch those games or you can not watch them. If you don't want to watch them, that way you can skip past them. Another issue I had with the game is when you're playing this game, much like as all these games are, you will get little objects will appear on the pitch. Okay. There's a ton of these objects. Just to go over a few. There's things that will affect how the object, the ball you're hitting, moves. Some stuff will make it go real fast. Some stuff will make it basically not go anywhere at all. Those are okay. Then you've got stuff like there's a special effect that will seal the exits, which I don't think I ever came across that one.
I never
there's
saw one that.
There's one that teleports you back to the middle. Yeah. But there's one that makes the ball go crazy. There's one that... But the one that I'm talking about that makes the game ridiculous is the free kick. And I'm sure you saw it, but it's a big F on a big ball. Yeah. And when you get this, you get like 8 seconds where your opponents can't move.
Right.
And so you just roll the ball right up to their goal and just nudge it in. It's great if it's you. But, I mean, that's super lopsided, especially if you're trying to play a game like this.
The thing is, I really don't mind that, you know, because this is not, you know, FIFA. This is not Madden. This is a wacky, futuristic air hockey game, okay?
Yeah, but 8 seconds?
And here's the thing. 8 seconds may seem like a long time, but a lot of times it takes time to maneuver yourself and the ball to the correct position. I've gotten the free kick and failed to score before.
I have too. If you were playing two other people, that would piss you off. That's too long. Maybe 4 seconds would have been fine, but not 8. 8 is too far. You also picked up cash, like you mentioned, and you pick up stamina upgrades, which is nice. So, I mean, otherwise, I don't have too big a problem with that. That's the one I thought, man, that's too much right there. But the layout of the grid is perfect. The loading screens are perfect. This game, but there's a lot of ways that the game is no frills. When you win a game, there's no, like, posing. There's no, like, your team out in the, you know, there's nothing. It just moves on. When the game ends and you lose, there's nothing. There's no ballyhoo. There's, you know, they did a lot of stuff. They added a lot of cute little things, but they didn't add any sort of, like, extra spice to it, you know, aside from the few things we've mentioned. So
yeah,
I see, like, that.
You know, I always think about, like, for example, in Speedball, whenever you win, you always see your players hold the cold ones, you know, and stuff like that. It would have been nice if they would have put in a victory screen for each team.
Yeah. You can also get injured in this, which I also never saw. I'll admit, I only played about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 tournament or league games. I did a lot of just playing solo stuff. Did you ever see anybody get hurt?
No, I read in the manual that it was possible, but I don't know how that would be displayed.
Yeah, I don't either. But, you know, long story short, I think people, I mean, you remember Ball Blazer, the Lucasfilm game? Like, remember that game was like Ballyhoo because it was in 3D, you know? Mm-hmm. But I mean, in a lot of ways, this game is like the top-down version of that sort of game in like a different arena. I hated that game, right? I thought it sucked. I could never tell what was happening, right? So, but I always thought the concept was kind of cool. Well, this is that same game, except done way better, because this is the way it should have been done. Despite the fact this isn't as impressive graphically, this is the way it should have been done. It's fun. It's a game you can play 3 people at once, and I think it's a game that if people would take the time to just give it a little bit of try, I think they would enjoy it more than they did. And I think this is one boat that we've stumbled upon. I mean, this isn't as lush or well thought out or with a great legendary backstory like, say, a Speedball 2, for example. You know, I'm not saying this is better than that because that game's got a lot going for it. But I'm saying this is a nice game along the same lines that is probably more friendly to your to pick up and play than Speedball 2.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, this is the game where if you have some buddies over who aren't real big gamers and you want to have a good multiplayer time, just and because what it does is it levels the playing field. The fact that nobody really has total control over what's going on is what makes the game fun.
Yeah, yeah. This game, I don't know how it performed, if I'm honest. I didn't see any numbers. It did win. It was number 69 in the all-time top 100 Amiga games and Amiga Power in 91. So this, they thought it was good enough to at least make the number 69. I guess that's something. The people over at Lemon Boat give this one a 7.56. Pretty decent score. I think that's a fair score. The magazines were sort of in the same ballpark. Amiga Action gave it a 76, Amiga Format a 90, Amiga Joker a 53, but you expect that. Amiga Power 74, CU Amiga 71, and the overall average magazine rating 76. So just right about this in line with the Lemon score. I actually like this a little bit more. I think this is a B game. I mean, I think it's a B title. It could have been an A title with a few, with a little bit more, but after reading the blog. These guys sort of got caught with their pants down because EA, they were running late on this game. And they had been trying to do other games while working on this to, like, make extra money to keep the ball rolling. And their other games just didn't pan out. And EA was like, yeah, we're going to murder you. And they were, so they doubled down and put this got this thing ready to go. But I think they left a little bit on the table, you know, trying to get this thing out the door. But I think there's enough here to make this a fun game to play at your user group party. You know, if you have a couple buddies over, I think you could have a good time with this. What do the Discord people think, Boater?
They had a different opinion. Pajaco 6502 writes, is anyone good at projectile? Because it feels like you're at the whim of physics. I seem to have had little actual control over the ball and mostly reliant on being on the opposite side of where I wanted the ball to go when I hit it. Even getting in position to hit the ball was not easy. And I'm going to stop right here because that's the point. That is the point. The point is you don't have total control over the ball. It's like playing air hockey. Anyway.
This is one of those games where the controls are part of the game. This is one of those.
He says, when I did manage to score a goal, I felt no sense of achievement. And given that just having the ball bounce off you into the goal can score, and it's possible for anyone on the field to score with no skill needed. Graphics are okay, but very bland color scheme. I disagree with that. But the music is pretty cool and the menu is unclear. Gameplay is sadly not existent. Luck plus physics is not gameplay. For a game that feels like we need a Speedball clone, you'd better off be playing Speedball or Future Basketball instead.
Oh.
If it's a multiplayer game, this might be more fun, but as single player, it's a hard pass for me, 4 out of 10. Laurent Giroux writes, hey, I finally got to install and play that one. Let's see. And he goes into great detail about using the keyboard in this game. So suffice to say, I'm not going to read everything that he says.
Yeah, that is
don't
an option.
Don't use the keyboard if you have an option.
Well, I mean, you could. I could. This game seems like it'd be okay with the keyboard. It's not that difficult.
He says, the whole user experience is a nightmare. The UI makes zero ergonomic sense. The default music is an atrocious, mindless loop, which will render anyone insane in minutes.
That's true.
And the sound effects you can replace it with are boring and nondescript.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure the concept has merit, but the implementation sure doesn't. Score, 3 out of 10. Try to understand how not to make a game.
Wow.
Possibly 5 out of 10 in multiplayer, where I would bet the constant own goals would be an endless source of fun.
Did you have that much trouble with that?
Well, you've got to come to terms with the fact that this is a game where you do not have direct control of the ball, okay? And if you can't, if that bothers you, then play another game. Because this game.
Here's what I don't understand, Boat. Like, when you, we didn't mention this, but when you go to the different chambers that have the different people's goals in it, they're color-coded, so you know where you're going, right? And there's also a map.
Here's the other thing,
that tells you where the goals are, so you know before you even start. So just if you're worried about scoring on yourself, just don't push the puck near where your goal's at. It ain't that tough.
And here's the other thing. In Speedball, in Kickoff, in Sensible, 99% of your players are just lumbering around off screen, okay? In this game, every time that you have a player off screen or on screen, he's right in the center of the action because they put one player from each side in every chamber. This is genius.
Got a radar. We don't even need it, but it's there.
They've got a radar. Yeah, this is great. This is one of these times, Aaron, that I do not understand why people hate this game the way that they do, because I thought it was great. I thought this was a great game.
Let me just say this, okay? We look into this more than most, okay? So if you didn't know, let's say, for example, Boat, you didn't understand how the map worked. And so you always went to the frantic zone, or you always went to your own goal, okay? And you kept scoring and getting pissed off. You know, and you didn't turn off the music, and you didn't maybe use an easier level, and you didn't know what the power-ups did. You could see where you could get mad, but you can't get mad at the game because you didn't figure out how the thing works.
If you hated it that much.
It's like
holding an NES controller with your butt and blaming Super Mario Brothers.
Well, at face value, this game seems generic. You're just like, oh, here's another one of these generic losers. You know, like Ballistics. Remember Ballistics?
Awful and bad.
Well, that's my. But I'm just saying this. If you didn't know, you can look at this and be like, "Oh, here we go again." But I think maybe some of the people that try this, if they'd give it another whirl, they might get into it. Go ahead, Bozo. Got any more?
That's it, man. That's all we got.
Well, it is what it is. Now, listen. If we've convinced you, the gentle listener at home, to go check this out, and I would suggest to at least give it a whirl. I did look on eBay to see what these are going for, Boat, as you know I like to do. And these are going for, if you're in the UK, you get these all day long, complete in the box, brother, for about £25 or best offer. Now, £14 or best offer. And I did see one of these sell for $42 for some reason, but they're up. There's a ton of them up there for £14 or best offer, and they're complete in box. If you want to buy this thing, you get the big poster. Might be kind of cool to have if you wanted it. Mm-hmm. Or you could throw darts at it if you hate it that bad. It might be kind of cool. But I really do. I mean, this is a game. I mean, I think it's fairly colorful. I think it's fairly clever. And I think it's something that you could enjoy if you would sit down and really sequester yourself and give it a chance. I think you might get a kick out of a Boat.
Welcome to Retro Rewind. I'm your host, British Jones. Whether you're into the Amiga, Commodore 64, or Tiger Floral Print Speed Suits, Retro Rewind has all you need from the friendly hosers of the Great White North. Looking to upgrade your Amiga? Check out the Amiga OS 3.2.2 Kickstart ROM for just $18. Or maybe you need a C64 or C128 diagnostic harness. Grab one while they're hot. Don't miss our bestsellers like the 1541 Transit Card for just $1. Or the incredible Amiga Coin Cell Battery Adapter. Shop now at Retro Rewind Limited and bring your classic computers back to life. Retro Rewind Limited. Frank's the man.
Amiga News. Gamble Train.
It's Gamble Train, Boat. We're ready to rock and roll,
That's
bro.
Right. That's right. So first up, we got a post from Amiga Love. He's talking about he was over at the Seattle Commodore Computer Club meeting. And, you know, this is one of these things, Aaron. It's like... You've got Seattle, huge place, huge town, home of Microsoft, you know, sort of the Silicon Valley of the North. And you look at these pictures and it looks like nobody showed up at this thing. It's just kind of empty. And when you combine that with whatever they got going down at the Sacktown Jubilee, I mean, where are all the Amiga users on the West Coast?
Sacktown drew good this year. So they're gonna put them over. They drew real good. I saw that. It was a great crowd. It's hard to tell from this. I mean, this is a meeting, you know. I'm looking at the pictures. So the pictures are kind of cool, but you can't really judge what kind of crowd they had at this thing.
All
you
I
know?
Can say is that the retro computer scene seems to be growing on the East Coast and rapidly, rapidly shrinking on the West Coast.
What do you base that on, Boat? Your own biases toward the best. the East Coast and the West Coast. Listen, we're not going to get into a rap war over retro gaming, Boat. All right, come on, Biggie. Pull it in. But that looks great. And we love Amiga Love. You know,
we
that ThinkPad he's showing off. I got one of these things back at the pad, if you know what I mean. Mm. I got one of those. It's junk, though. They fall apart. Sorry. I used to work for IBM. I know what they are. That looks fun. Aaron, congratulations, people in Seattle.
This next story is sure to bring you joy and mirth. Phoenix is coming to the Amiga, Aaron. I know you love Phoenix, don't you?
Oh, you got that right. I watched Amiga Bill play this. It looked quite good.
Now, what separates your Phoenixes and your Cosmic Arcs from your run-of-the-mill space shooters that were a dime a dozen on their retro computers back in the day?
Well, of course, those two games are not anything alike, but I see what you're getting at. It's a valid point. This one has big, weird birds. I think that's what mostly separates it. You know, and the funny thing about Phoenix, I love Phoenix, and this looks great. Okay, so I'm going to put this over before I go on my rant, all right? I love Phoenix. Now, why do I love it? At the time when it came out, I thought this had the best graphics I'd ever seen. The birds, like, they flapped their wings, and the music was great. It was great. Its sound effects are great. Now, when you play this game, it's got a myriad of flaws. Like, bullets will go right through stuff. You know, I mean, it's got collision detection issues. It's brutally unfair in a lot of ways. But it's fun. It also had multiple levels, which, again, as stupid as that sounds, that was a whole different ball game back in the day when you've been playing Space Invaders and Galaxian. All of a sudden, you're fighting the home base and all, you know, all this other cool stuff. So it's a fun game. But even look at the Phoenix. Look at the ship you're driving. It looks like the bump and jump car, rolling around. It's like bump and jump in space. But I mean, that's the game. It adds to the fun. I never noticed that though. Just the exact second as I'm looking at that. This looks great. JOTD was the guy that was doing the transcode on this sucker. You had a good flurry of folks here. I saw Bill playing this. I think it now features music. I think this is, you can get this now. I think you can. But JOTD has done, it says here listed, Moon Patrol, Donkey Kong, Tetris, Super Bagman, Karate Champ, Galaxian. He's done tons of crap. Super Zebius, which you played on the show. So this guy's a credit to the Amiga. He's all man, and I salute him for bringing another one of my favorites over, Boat. I'm excited about this one. This one, we'll have to do somebody's on the show. Sounds like an Amiga arcade summer, if you know what I mean.
It's coming up, man. Yeah. I can't wait. Hey, Aaron, speaking of things that are coming up, there is a new issue of Amiga Future. Now, you know we love Amiga Addict. It's Britain's number one selling Amiga magazine and Britain's number one selling computer magazine on the whole. But if you're over in DOS, Germany, then you're going to want to be checking out a magazine in your own language, the lingua franca, as they say in Germany.
Is that
what
they say?
There is a new issue coming out right now. Now, unfortunately, my internet has taken a dive, so I cannot load the page.
It's not loading for me either, so don't feel bad. That
maybe,
not loading.
You know, I'll tell you what happened. Amiga Future, the so many people are excited about the new issue, they've crashed the site. So AmigaFuture.de is currently down. However, I will say that I believe there is an article with Mr. Pleasance in there. They cover the new A122 board, the next-gen Amiga project from Trevor Dickinson. So check out all the hot action. And, of course, Amiga Future is available in both English and German. So don't fret, people that live in this country. You can, too, go to the future, the Amiga future.
You know, we used to – remember when they sent us a couple of these back in the day?
I love
back
Amiga
in our fledgling years. And they were this is before we had the newer stuff. And it was quite nice, glossy and beautiful. And the English translation was pretty good. And it's probably gotten better, I'd wager, Boat.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. All right, Aaron, coming up next, we've got three important events that are honing into view here. The first one is Amigo Aaron's Pod Jam 2024. Tell us about it, Aaron.
Yeah, we've just got a few days left on this boat. The wacky contest to make your own podcast and submit it for this contest. You got 5 days and about 3 hours to submit one as we record this. This ends May 1st at 12 a.m. Boat, the witching hour. What is this? Well, what it is you make a podcast you upload it here to this webpage, and then people listen to it. You got a chance to get your podcast instantly listened to by way more people than you probably would have gotten a chance to on your own, because we've got, you know, we got a few people listen to us, you know what I mean? And we've already had, well, me and Bode each did a token one just because we're wacky, and we don't have enough podcasts, but we've actually gotten three entries so far. The 7-4 show from our buddy Graham. Pajaco sent in a very interesting one called I Should Be Doing Housework, episode 1. And we've also had Pack Billy's Yet to Be Named Eaten by a Dragon podcast, which actually caught that one last week on the road. And then just up from a fellow you know, a podcast called You're the Poet. Do you know anything about this?
My buddy Matt, him and his father are creating a podcast about poetry where each week they feature a different local poet.
This is episode one. If you're interested, the judges on this are going to be our good buddy Ravi Abbott from the Retro Hour, Rob Flack O'Hara, who's well known for his podcast, You Don't Know Flack, Sprite Castle, and a myriad of other ones, and everyone's favorite cave dweller, Neil, RMC. They're going to listen to these. They're going to pick the top three, and our buddy Frank at Richard Rewind is going to give out gift cards for the top three places. Good deal. You've got a good shot if you get your podcast in the next 5 days of maybe winning something. But more importantly, Boat, you can tell yourself, "Hey, I did it! Finally, maybe this is the launching point." By the way, we don't have any rights to your podcast. We don't hold on to your podcast. It's all you. All we're doing is giving you a chance to get your podcast out there. It's a good idea. And I hope that a few more people take advantage of it before the deadline of May 1st, 2024, Bode.
Right.
I've liked everyone I've heard, by the way, every single one.
Now, coming up next, Aaron, we got to give, there's new news popping off all the time over at AmigaShow.com. Last week, we talked a little bit about the community room that was going down over in Nottingham. By the way, we're talking about the UK's biggest and best Amiga show. This is the 29th and 30th of June, and this coming June, just about 2 months away. You can join the myriad of people who are going to be there, and this is hot off the press. We just got notice that there's a possibility that Gary Antcliffe from Core Designs is going to be making an appearance. So you can add that in addition to the luminaries, such as Pete Cannon, world-famous recording artist that uses an Amiga, Tony Warner from Revolution Software. We just talked about his game, Lure of the Temptress, last week.
We just talked about Stu. He did the graphics initially for the game we just talked about. There you go.
Stu Cambridge.
Ask him what the hell happened.
Oh, listen, he's my housemate at the thing. So Stu and
really?
I...
Really? Stu is?
Yeah. Yeah.
You get the scoop on this game, Boats. What are the odds of that? I love it.
I will ask them all about it. Hoffman is going to be there. World famous DJ Hoffman and Trevor Dickinson from Eon Technology, the makers of the next gen Amigas, plus thousands of other Amiga groups. You know, all of the UK's major Amiga groups are going to be there, the user groups. There's going to be an after party over at the Salt Box that's going to be off the chain. The composer of a lot of the music from Donkey Kong Country, I know, Aaron, one of your favorite games, is going to be there doing a live set with his band. There's going to be lots of DJ jungle Amiga-based music.
I hope the crew from Retro Asylum are at this, because they were killing Donkey Kong Country a few episodes ago. I was baffled as I listened to this. I was like, what the hell happened? Why are they killing this? And they didn't even say something about the music. So maybe this guy will be there. Because I talked to Kit at ICC. He's on the Retro Asylum crew.
Oh,
and he was the only one that stood up for Donkey Kong Country. I'm like, that's why you're on the show, Kit. We need the Americans to come in here and get something straight here. I couldn't
figure
that out.
Which is hilarious because it's a British game. It's Rare developed it.
Listen,
so.
I can't. What can I tell you? Who badmouths that game? I thought that game was freaking awesome.
It's great.
I'm looking down this. Look at this. The Norwich, the Scottish, the Robin Hood, the West Midlands, Midlands. You've got all these user groups that are all coming together. Control Alt Reese, Rob Smith, the Retro Collective. You got everyone coming to this. I mean, look at these traders. You're going to have, this is going to be the number one place to buy and sell Amiga stuff. Like, it's going to be off the chain. It's amazing the amount of people they're going to have at this thing. It says here more coming. And then, you know, Rabbi's all 24/7. He's on top of it, isn't he, Boat?
Mm-hmm. He is. I'm sort of, right at the fountainhead where he's telling me about all these things. There are some things that we can't quite talk about yet because they're still under wraps. But week by week, we're going to be dribbling things out. Listen, this event is filling up fast. You're going to want to get your tickets right now. Go to AmigaShow.com, find out all about it, and come hang out with me, Ravi, and all the boys this coming June.
You know, before we move off this topic, just one quick thing. I'm looking at special guests here. Stu Cambridge, Pete Cannon, Tim Warren, all these guys. And then here it is, John Bonacar Schaller. And you're in the same conversation with these Amiga luminaries. Don't tell them that you didn't know what an Amiga was a few years ago. Don't let that slide.
I've been an Amiga user my whole life.
I think
I
it's
love
a great
the video
boat.
Booster.
I mean, you're the king dog.
I know
you're
exactly
the,
what it does.
You're the highest ranking American on the show.
That's true. And frightening.
So don't humiliate us, folks.
It shows you, Doug, what an impact he had in the United States. So, Aaron, we got one more thing to talk about here, and it's the BoatFest Retro Computer Expo. This is going
and
down
episode.
two weeks before the kickstart. This is going down right here in our hometown of Hurricane, West Virginia. You can join us. This is year number 3, the first year we did BoatFest. We couldn't believe it happened. It was a miracle.
I still can't believe
it.
Yeah.
In the second year, we gathered some more folks. We were in a slightly bigger venue. We didn't make the floor cave in of our event, although we gave it our best shot. This year, Aaron, we're come to the peak of the mountain. We are at a real event space with real room and real space, and we've sold more tickets than ever before.
And no ramps.
No ramps, plenty of parking. You can join us in downtown Hurricane, West Virginia at the social event space. It's only $30 for the whole weekend. Boatfest.info. You can check out all the info. We're going to have people coming in from literally all over the world. We've got people coming in from Australia, from the UK, from Norway, and of course from all around the United States and Canada to converge for a weekend of retro computer revelry and mirth.
Yeah. Some people have asked, Boat, about our scheduling and stuff. And, you know, usually it takes us a little while to get to it. But I'd say in the next month or so, we should get pretty much a schedule pounded out, wouldn't you say?
Well, here's the schedule. Everybody sets up their crap. We talk about the crap. And we have a lot of fun. That's the schedule.
There'll be shows. There'll be contests. We're going to do a new thing this year called the Featured Table. Hopefully everyone will want to talk to me, Boat, because I'm going to try to get to talk to everybody that comes to this thing, because the best part of this show is just the people. The people, what they bring, what their life story is, what are you into, like where are you from? You know, it's interesting. I had so much fun last year just talking to everybody, and I didn't get to everybody last year. I missed a few guys. And so this year I'm hoping, and gals, this year I'm hoping to talk to everybody that comes in and have a nice conversation. I'm looking forward to that, too. And it will be streamed. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right now in the chat, Portai asks, will it be streamed? 100% of the event will be streamed. You can purchase a virtual ticket if you would like to support the event. Of course, you're under no obligation to. The entire event will be streamed live on our Twitch page. But we are really, really excited. We think this is going to be the best BoatFest yet. And like Aaron said, we're going to get this schedule up on boatfest.info soon, so you can check out what's going on and you can plan your weekend around what you want to see when you want to see it.
I'm excited, Boat. I really, really am excited. I'm bringing everything. I'm emptying the vault this year.
I can't wait. Are you going to put that ST on the block?
I haven't decided yet. Don't talk about the ST to me right now.
And we should mention there will be an auction that will be live streamed. And as long as we can corral TSI Matt into it, we can even have some online bidders on some of the auction items. That last year, that was a big hit. We plan to do that again this year with even more cool stuff up on the block for auction.
That auction was insane. If you don't give a crap about me or Boat, let's say you hate us. And you hate Hurricane, you don't like what you're doing. You can come to this just for the auction, and then you can walk away like King Dong, because the deals are off the charts last year. I couldn't believe it. Frank says he's buying everything again. No, you're not Frank.
Yes, all right. And, of course, we do want to give a quick shout-out to Frank Retro Rewind for being the official sponsor of BoatFest.
He'll be there, right? He'll be there again this year, won't he, Boat?
He'll be there doing repairs on the fly. Him and his crew of crazy Canadians will be there, and we look forward to it. It's going to be a happening, and, man, June can't get here fast enough for lots of reasons.
Right on.
All right, man. Aaron, what are we playing next week on Amiga?
Let's have a look, bud. It's Rampart, Boat. We're playing Rampart. This is a game I've heard about. I've seen this box forever, you know, but I don't think I've ever actually tried Rampart. So this is going to be, I mean, maybe I have, but I don't remember. But have you ever played this one?
This is an arcade port. And
yeah.
So this is one we're going to have to dig into a little bit. Play the arcade original, play some of the ports, play the Amiga version. We'll have a lot to talk about. I know that this is one of the few arcade games that had two separate releases with two different control schemes. It had both a joystick and a trackball release. So we'll have to see how it comes to terms with the Amiga and what controllers it uses there. I can't wait for this one, Aaron. It's going to be a good one.
Was this an Atari one, Boat?
I believe it was. I believe this was an original.
I think I saw this. Now that you mentioned it, I do think I've seen this in the arcade. So, yeah, now I'm even more interested. Because if it was in the arcade, how hard could it be?
All right. If you like the show and you want to support what we do, head on over to patreon.com/amigospodcast. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week. And until then, adios.
Amigos is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/amigospodcast if you'd like to support the show and join our community.